Oh, man. They don't pay me enough to wake up this early. Chad, initiate store open protocol.
Affirmative.
What? Aw, man. I hope this is another mutant sex orgy. I'm not cleaning that off the walls again. What is that?
Hey, Mike. I hope I wasn't being too loud. I just got a really good pump going right now, and I guess got carried away.
No, that's okay. It's just I didn't know you pumped.
Well, I didn't, but after hearing Ryan go on and on about that Muscle Mountain Power Man competition and wanting to be the best there ever was, I don't know. It just kind of motivated me to get out and start getting into shape, you know? You haven't felt any sort of motivation since Ryan started lifting?
Well, no. I'm already swole as fuck, as you can see. This is actually my second shirt I've put on today. I keep spontaneously busting out of them because of my bulging muscles.
Wow. That's a problem I wish I had.
Speaking of Ryan, where is he? I didn't see him in the store.
Oh, he left a few hours ago. He's going to apply to that gym in Citadel. I guess he got tired of all my sweat on the equipment back here.
Jesus, Dave, don't you wipe it off?
Yeah, but with all the live wire I drink, it tends to really marinate on the seat cushions, you know?
Oh, God.
Anyway, I think I'm done for today. I'm gonna go wash up and get ready for the day.
Right. I guess I'll be applying for a gym membership, too.
Oh, Mike, before I forget it, it looks like there was another mutant orgy last night. They messed up the east side wall something fierce. There's fluids and all sorts of slimy discharge on the wall. It's bad. Would you mind taking care of that before you open the store?
Sure, boss.
Thanks, Mike.
Patience, Michael. Climb the ladder.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movie-less wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2 and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
So, how's your training coming, Dave?
Not too bad. In fact, I can finally do that thing where you move your pecs like eyebrows.
Not bad. You've come along quickly, haven't you? What's your secret?
I've been watching a lot of bodybuilding documentaries for tips. And that and steroids. Lots and lots of steroids.
Oh, sure. That goes without saying.
Cody! How's it going, man?
Pretty good. I'm training for the big Power Man competition on Muscle Mountain, and I thought I'd come by the store to brush up on some muscle-building techniques.
Damn, this competition is sweeping the wasteland. First Ryan catches the fever, then you.
Well, let's see how you're doing, Cody. Why don't you bust out of your shirt and show us your progress?
Oh, sure, no problem.
Whoa!
I know, not bad, eh? But shirt ripping is only part of what they grade you on in Power Man. I need more help if I want any chance of winning this thing.
Well, hey, I was just telling Mike about these bodybuilding documentaries I've been watching to help learn about pumping up and all. Well, why don't we watch one?
Perfect. And I'm beginning to run out of steroids, too, so maybe this will give me an edge.
No problem, Cody. I've got the perfect documentary to help you steal that Power Man title away from the Wharton Hoof. Chad, load Pumping Iron.
Affirmative.
Oh, shit. I haven't seen Pumping Iron in years.
Me neither.
Well, get ready, gentlemen, because you're about to start coming in the store, coming in the gym, coming...
Yeah, that's enough, David. We get it. Chad, begin playback.
Welcome to this year's Mr. Olympia Championship.
There certainly has never been a competition like this before.
Lou Ferrigno. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You have to do everything possible to win.
I dreamt about Arnold last night. I said, Louie is waiting for you in the shadows.
Well, I've not been beaten for the last 7 years.
You're going to be the biggest thing that ever went out on that platform at 275 pounds, Louie. They know that, and he knows it.
If he's in shape, fine. I hope he is.
Half a more weight.
Let's go.
I want to beat him. Come on. Wherever
he goes, you pose down with him. Let the judges make a comparison. You look at your arms like you're admiring, and then you go, boom.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I will mix him up. He will be ready to lose.
I called my mother yesterday already, and I said I won.
When we get out there, we have only one thought in mind. We're going to win.
That's it. No more.
It's going to be very hard to beat. Very hard.
Winner of the 1975 Mr. Olympia is...
You'll never get this chance again.
All right. That was Pumping Iron. I'm your host, David Snyder. I'm joined again by Michael Althaus.
Hello, Dave. I thought I was going
to
have
something
there.
Michael, you have
to relax. All right. I got to get in the pumping mindset.
You don't really get that good intro until like the 9th or 10th or 11th rep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's when the muscles start to build for the intro.
And we're joined by special guest returning from the wasteland to pump, Cody.
Hey guys. I feel very pumped and ready to go.
No, you have to be stronger. You have to be more, you know, when you do your angles, you have to be looking off, you know? You got to keep a straight line.
Let's do it, Dave. I'm ready. Let's go.
The screaming and the grunting, that is something that we will address in this episode. Well, see, that's the funny thing. Like, you think that's all this is going to be, but that is not how Pumping Iron begins. Cody, why don't you tell us just a brief little synopsis of the documentary Pumping Iron.
Yeah, Pumping Iron. It's a documentary shot based around the 1975 Mr. Olympia. It follows the 100 days before the competition, follows a few competitors, one Lou Ferrigno, one Franco Colombo, oh, and that's right, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so it's all about them kind of, I wouldn't even say it's all about, it's very not heavy in the plot.
We get a few different stories.
Yeah, that's the thing, is we kind of like get some stories, but we don't follow like, okay, it's day 20, at this point I need to like really shred my diet, it's nothing like that, so it's kind of weird. But yes, it follows them in the lead up to their competition.
It's a little, it touches on a little bit of like bodybuilding in general.
I think it's designed for like bodybuilding 101, right? Like, hey, what is bodybuilding and who are these people that do it? And it's more about the people that, and like their personal story than anything else.
Yeah, that's legit. Pumping Iron came out, and at the time, bodybuilding was very niche. It wasn't a big thing at all. Like, it wasn't a well-known thing, which I think kind of gets across by all the scenes where it's being done in, like, weird American Legion halls and stuff like that. But,
Lou Ferrigno training in, like, his, like, apartment basement gym.
Yeah, his health studio, as it's called. Yeah. Three more!
Come on, Lou!
Yeah, so that's basically it.
There's some interesting things. We get into like some pranks between the people, some rivalries. There's a couple of different rivalries in the documentary. Some a little more intense than, well, not intense, but some a little more mean spirited, I would say, than others.
Sure.
It's interesting though. I would say a big takeaway from this movie is like these people are kind of all in a community together, and there's a lot of heart there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Overall, I'd say that's a good point, a good takeaway, you know, that you get. But yeah, that's kind of the gist of Pumping Iron, but a really breezy hour and 25 minutes. Like, this was a really fun documentary. There, like, suffice it to say, there was no fat in this documentary, is that fair to say? But as I was getting at before, you think the whole documentary would be, but it actually begins with Arnold in like a ballet studio.
That's right.
Like he's kind of,
because you know, that's what this is, Dave. This is no different than ballet or a beauty pageant or whatever. But it's gendered for men.
Because I've seen this before, but it had been a long time. Like it kind of struck me, like as you said, Cody. This would have been like a look at this bodybuilding thing that none of you are aware of. It's mm-hmm. so niche. Like, here's, like, the ins and outs. And so people going in are probably thinking, like, they're going to get that, lifting thing. But then they're treated to this scene of ballet where they're just sort of learning the forms, mm-hmm. and, you know, and they're very, like,
learning how to show off their bod.
Yeah, and they're well-spoken. Like, I feel like it's almost like it's sort of meant to... Hey, why are you laughing? I sort of... I feel like it's
well spoken. Of all the people that we deal with, only one of them speaks like native English, like without an accent.
Well, no, but I mean, they don't come off as like, I don't think anyone in this documentary comes off as, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like
yeah,
in general,
no one like, comes off like a meathead.
Yeah, exactly. They're all, when I say well spoken, I mean, they're just, yeah, they're not just like,
no, I think totally well spoken was the right term. It's just funny because, you know, what the movie is full of is people like speaking, and you're like, I'm not sure. I understood exactly what that was. But.
I mean, we did turn on the subtitles, to be truthful.
I love that ballet scene. Like, that's a perfect beginning to this movie because it kind of like sets the mood. And there's a great line there that this is the second time I've seen it, this movie.
Same.
I didn't catch it the first, or it didn't stick with me or whatever the first time. But there's a line in that first scene where the woman, so it's Lou Ferrigno and Arnold, and they're both like doing ballet but also kind of like working on their poses together.
Was that Lou Ferrigno? I think that was Franco Colombo.
Oh, was it? That was Franco Colombo.
Yeah, Arnold's best friend for life.
Okay, yep. So yeah, I'm like his father.
oh, we'll get to that.
So, but anyway, the trainer is like, it's not just about the poses. It's about the time in between the poses.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was like, oh, damn.
And they're watching you the entire time, not just at the pose.
Almost, you could take another spin at this. It almost seems, because Arnold is clearly, in this entire documentary, Arnold is at the top. Mm-hmm. He's already won Mr. Olympia, which is the top bodybuilding competition in the world, 5 times. He's going for number 6. He's going to retire after. And thinking back on it, it almost, like, throughout the entire documentary, he is completely composed, completely relaxed, completely, like, at one with himself. Like, he knows how good he is.
Well, I think he's absorbed that lesson. Like, I feel like that kind of thing of, like, they're looking at you even when you're not, like, doing the specific thing you're supposed to be doing here.
Well, what I mean, like, it almost feels like he's, like, maybe I'm going at this the wrong way, but it almost seemed like I'm going to go into areas that I bet other guys won't go into because they're like, they think it's too girly or something. But no, see, that's where they're wrong. You know what I mean? You got to get those tips from the people who really know how to move gracefully with the body. You know what I mean? I see him like exploring all areas of, like, to me, like, as far as bodybuilding is concerned, he seems like a guy that would be like, I want to know everything. You know what I mean? I want to integrate all these things into bodybuilding and be like the absolute best bodybuilder mm-hmm. in the world.
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah, I could see it coming that way, but I think I agree with Mike's take that it's that kind of spoken, that sentence at the beginning is almost like a thesis throughout the documentary, even though
Arnold's career.
Yes, yeah. He's very aware. He's very present of how he always comes off, and so he controls that in a way that, you know, it only sees returns on the rest of his career and life, is that he's like, when I'm not doing this, I'm also in between, I'm doing this other thing. I think it really sums up the idea there.
He's definitely like the main through point through this movie. It always comes back to Arnold
And there's really, I mean, there's maybe a couple points, maybe one or two. There's definitely a couple points where he maybe comes across not as great. But for the most part, I think this documentary is in love with Arnold.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, the first time I watched this, I was kind of like, oh, man, Arnold's being, like, really a dick to Lou.
Me too.
But yeah. I think I don't know. I think maybe I'm just, like, older now because I saw it in my early 20s, and now I'm, like, 30. And I was like, nah, this is, like, just sportsman joshing. Like, yes. Maybe it's just because I've seen, like, I've seen more examples of genuine shitty behavior that now when I'm seeing Arnold and he's like, oh, well, tell Lou I hope he's not too trained. Like,
it's very, almost childish.
It seems
not to a nefarious degree.
So, you know? No, there's that scene at the end where they're, like, roughhousing in the back of the van, and it's very much like, we're the sports team on the way home from the big game. Like, yeah. I think it's all in good fun, and there's not malice. It doesn't feel like there's malice behind the Arnold Lou dynamic, I think.
What did you say, Lou? What did you say?
I'm training, Arnold. I gotta get a good pump.
You made too much noise. It has to be very quiet here, like in the church. I watch you.
I watch you too.
With the bobble above my head. I better watch you, dear.
You know, doing some more research on the old pumping iron, I came across the fact that apparently the producers injected some fake stories into the documentary because they felt like there wasn't any conflict otherwise. Mm. And so part of me, and the one that they listed specifically was that Arnold didn't go to his dad's funeral. That's not true.
Oh, really?
It's 100% not true.
That was going to be one of the points where I said Arnold doesn't come off.
Arnold, he was with his dad shortly before he passed, and he did go back to his dad for the funeral. Like, he went home for the funeral.
I don't think, like, even if he didn't go to his dad's funeral, I just figured, like, man, I guess there's some more to this story we don't know. Like, I wouldn't
right.
hold that against him.
100%. I felt the same, but I didn't think any ill of him for that. But it was this comment where it's like, oh, they injected these fake stories. The most notably was that one. And then learning that, I was like, okay, so I don't know how much of any of this to take at face value. Request,
quote unquote rivalries.
Right. Yeah. Especially because there's a moment in the middle of the documentary. And it's weird that we switch between calling movie documentary. Like, because doesn't movie usually, in my opinion, movie implies like fiction almost across the
story.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's weird because it's like, well, you say it that way, but it's like the movie it doesn't have that much plot. But it's also not quite a documentary because it's not. I feel like it doesn't.
It's very loose.
It's very loose, which is cool.
It feels like a more modern documentary than something from 75, I think.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
That could be another reason why it's endured so long. It's a pretty popular documentary, because it's Arnold.
I mean, it's got Arnold back in it, no matter what.
I think it's well made.
Well, okay, so I don't know if that. So you say that you think it's more modernly made, but we find all of these like clear points of, you know, falsifying the story. Is that a thing that happens in, you know, modern?
You ever seen a Michael Moore documentary?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Is there a bunch of fake stuff in those? I haven't seen them since I was in high school, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's bad, I guess. But my point was, there's a moment kind of speaking to the rivalry or the joshing around in the middle of the movie where some guy, we don't know who he is like, so I'm going to go out to New York and I'm going to train with Ferrigno. What do you want me to say to him, Arnold? What do you want me to say? Like, what do you want me to do? Dad,
I'm gonna fuck him up.
Yeah, and Arnold's just like, tell him I say hi, tell him it's Dad, I say hi, and tell him I'll see him soon.
Yeah, that's the thing where he was like, tell him I hope he's training really, really hard. Yeah.
But he's not even his voice doesn't even tilt up. Like
like he got woken up from a nap.
Yes, he's taking a nap. He's just laying in this field, and that's funny. Is we see that a lot. We see a lot of like these bodybuilders just laying around places hanging out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very much like this guy's like trying to drum up some shit, and Arnold's just like, I don't know.
Arnold is definitely like playing it, or at least we see him playing into it in other parts, because there's the part where they get to South Africa for the Mr. Olympia, and Lou Ferrigno invites him over to breakfast with like his family, and Arnold comes over, and he's like, the whole thing is he's like, oh, I'm so scared, he's so big.
Yes, yes.
Well,
yes.
He plays it up. He goes through all the angles. He's like,
Lou, what's wrong? You don't look relaxed.
I'm
not sleeping, Arnold.
Oh, it's a shame, Lou. Maybe in a month you could have beat me, but you just missed it. You missed the
yeah. Well, like, and then he's like, but in a month I would be bigger too.
Well, it's so
yeah.
Crazy. That's
yeah, and that's the stuff that like when I was younger ever. I was like, he's a dick, but now I'm watching it like this is just all in good
it's
fun.
It's very low level shit. Yeah.
It also feels like maybe they're just awkward. You know what I mean? Yeah. It feels like they're not totally comfortable being on. Lou Ferrigno especially feels like he's not comfortable being on camera and stuff like that. Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because yeah, these are the things where looking back, you might be like, oh, he's kind of rude or an asshole, or maybe these aren't good people. But it's like, nah, it's just weird. It's just weird.
It's competition.
It's a vibe, and yes, it's competition. 100%.
Yeah.
Like, there's a point in that breakfast when so Arnold sits. So to set the scene, he sits down with with Lou's parents, Lou Ferrigno and his parents, and just to kind of set it up for anyone who hasn't seen it. This is kind of set up as sort of the main rivalry in the documentary. Lou Ferrigno versus Arnold. Arnold's got the title 5 times. He's going for a 6th.
And it's Lou's first
is like
year.
The up-and-comer. Yeah. It's his first year.
Lou is
like
basically Rocky Balboa in this movie.
He's the underdog. Yeah. Which we'll talk about that.
But he's much bigger.
You have this awkward dinner breakfast with them, and like there's a point when Arnold goes, he goes, yes, I even called my mom. I told her I already won. Well, he doesn't say already. He just says I won.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's like, oh, that's great. And meanwhile, Lou's just sitting there like this motherfucker. Yeah, but it's not that intense, as we said.
No,
yeah.
I agree, Mike. Like the first time I watched this, I was really like sort of like almost let down. Like, oh man, my hero's an asshole. But no, it's just like friendly rivalries in competition. Like I feel like there's a couple other ones that are a little more intense.
Yeah,
I say intense.
Like
it,
right,
but, like,
and you're talking about
you're talking about Mike Katz, and I think his name is Ken Waller.
Yeah, Ken Waller stealing Mike Katz's shirt.
Yeah.
And Mike Katz just seems like a total Mike.
Let's talk. Okay, so we'll get back to Arnold and Lou, but let's get back to the first rivalry that's set up.
Yeah.
And the one that I feel is like
real.
It's still within the realms of like competition.
Yeah.
But like this one goes more into dickish territory, mm-hmm. I feel, than it does with the Lou and Arnold dynamic. But let's set up this other rivalry. And honestly, watching this a second time, this one I was kind of a little more invested in because I had forgotten about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Cody, why don't you explain the rivalry between Mike Katz and Ken Waller?
So, Mike Katz and Ken Waller are two other American bodybuilders.
Amateurs, right?
Yes, they're amateurs. Yeah. And they compete in similar circuits early on. And the documentary kind of follows them for a little bit at one of these shows beforehand when they're up in, I believe they're in the Northeast. Mike Katz mentions being from Connecticut and stuff like that.
This is kind of like the build up to Mr. Olympia, right?
Yeah, it's like a local circuit that gets you up to the higher ones. And
which I like as a storytelling dynamic. Like we start low and
yeah,
then we're going
so
to
get
up to Olympia.
Definitely. No, I like that a lot. And Mike Katz is an interesting guy. He has a pretty interesting, you know, backstory.
He was picked on.
Yeah, he was bullied a lot, and you know,
like,
he was made fun of.
Anti-Semitism.
Because he was poor and he was Jewish. And you're just like, Jesus. And he's the other thing I want to call out real quick is all these people in this movie are like, they're 31, 32 or younger. And like, Mike Katz looks old as hell. But you know, that was 70 years. It's a lot of smoking, a lot of sun on that skin, you know, so they age. But
he also is refusing to admit that his
yeah.
hair is
his hairline is, yes. is fleeing on him.
Oh man, that was like such a hardcore 70s haircut.
Yeah.
Sure.
But so Mike Waller is competing. It follows him mostly. Mike Katz. But Waller is a guy who he's competing against, and then it cuts to Waller and he's just like, yeah, I'll do something. I'll steal his shirt or something. I'll mess with his head. I'll take his shirt. And then we see that play out. Mike Waller takes his shirt and hides it or something like that. And Mike Waller then wins. And
Ken
Mike
Waller.
What?
Ken Waller.
Ken Waller. Who cares? Waller then wins.
Respect the name.
And no, I'm not going to, because he's kind of the prick.
Oh no, I meant respect Mike Katz's name. Don't mix it up with
Mike
Ken Waller.
Katz is so good that everyone should be named Mike Katz.
I'm going to announce at the end of this episode, I'm changing my last name to Katz.
Ah, there perfect. You go. Yeah. Wonderful. Truly doing him a tribute. So he steals his shirt, and then Waller ends up winning that competition. And Katz is sitting there, and it's just this is too sad. I can't watch this.
It was heartbreaking.
Because he's just like, oh, incredible.
Like, oh, yeah, because he's like, incredible. Like, he lose. Mike Katz doesn't make top three. And the way you see this play out is they pick the top three, and then they have another kind of quick round where they rank the top three. And so when he gets fourth, by the way, they're like, and by the way, the announcer's
yes,
like,
noted.
And by the
yeah.
way, Mike has was fourth. And so I wonder, not even react to that.
Like, I wonder now if they say that because they were shooting a documentary.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. 100%. They added that in so that they could – there's no other reason to.
There's no reason.
And we don't see them do it at the other stuff. We don't ever see them announce who fourth place is, even though we don't know them.
For your information, audience, the hero that you've been following for the past 20 minutes, he got fourth.
Yes.
Got
and so he has that kind of shell shock thing
like, it's a great sequence. Like, the camera follows him down as he, like, walks off stage, and you just hear in the background, like, "In first place, Ken Waller!" And he's like, "Oh, that's great. That's great for him. I gotta shake his hand." Yeah. Like,
and the winner of the 1975 Tall Man category from the United States of America, Ken Waller.
Kenny won. Great. Terrific. How about that? Boy, that's fantastic. Fantastic. Can imagine how we must feel? Incredible. It's probably like I did when I was 16 and won my first trophy. In its own way, it's probably just as satisfying. I gotta go shake his hand. That's fantastic.
Great.
Get my t-shirt.
And in between those moments was he was like, "Where's my shirt? Has anybody seen my shirt?"
Mm-hmm. That was before he was about to go on. Like, right
that was before they brought them all back out to then choose the top three.
And you're talking about these people not being meatheads. Like, you see, I think that's a good example of, like, Mike Katz's, like, genuine personality, where he's very, like, shy. Like, he's just kind of, like, walking around before he's about to go on, and he's like, "Hey, has anyone seen a blue shirt? Is there a blue shirt anywhere?"
One must wonder if he had his shirt, may he have won.
Was that
his lucky shirt?
Real quick, following that arc to its conclusion, which is the next time we see either of those guys, it's Waller at the Olympia breakfast, and he's in the background, like, recording, and you're like, this guy means nothing to anybody here.
Yeah, he's just a loser. Like, yeah,
he was the villain and winner of the previous little smaller thing, and then he gets here, and it's Arnold and Ferrigno, and they're just, like, scarfing down on breakfast, and he's, like, walking around with his little camera, like, "Oh, I'm here too, guys. Like, don't you remember me? You were with me for weeks." And they're like, Waller, we don't want you anymore.
"Are you another camera person on the documentary? Well, film me and Arnold training."
We're probably really misrepresenting this guy, and I'm sure the documentary did too, but, you know, whatever.
In the documentary, Ken Waller comes off as this, like, a dumb jock. He's just like, "I'm going to fuck with him. He's the one going, "I'm going to steal his shirt."
Right. But, at the same time, Arnold does that too, but he doesn't steal, like, he doesn't, like, physically do anything. He's just like, a guy could come in there even if he's better than me, and by the next day I'll have talked him out of winning. Like,
he was talking specifically about Lou. It was funny. He was like,
"At the day of the contest, if he comes in his best shape and he's equally as good as I am, or if, let's say, he's a few percent better as I am, I spend with him one night. I go downstairs and book us together in a room, you know, to help him for tomorrow's contest. And that night, he will never forget. I will mix him up. He will come so ready to South Africa, so strong. But by the time the night is over, the next morning, he will be ready to lose. I mean, I will just talk him into that. That's no problem to do, you know? And so... all those things, you know, are available. And so if they're available, you might as well use them. So that's why it doesn't matter if he comes in shape or out of shape. If he comes out of shape, at least has less hassle for me, you know. And if he's in shape, fine. I hope he is.
But you couldn't pull this with Franco, could you? Franco's pretty smart.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Well, he's like, "I'll take him into a hotel room for a night."
That was weird.
Yeah, and then he's like, "And by the morning, he'll be losing." And I'm just like, this guy is doing a weird job of describing what he's doing.
I think he's just like having fun explaining. Again, keeping in mind English is not his native language, but I think he's like just explaining to the camera, like, "I'm gonna mess around and have fun and get in people's heads," which 100%. He does.
That's his point.
I don't think
he's so confident.
We never see him cross a line.
100%, 100%. Yeah, we don't. And it's great because we often see the women crossing lines on Arnold while he's, like, doing photo shoots and stuff.
Yes.
Or he's working out and then they're, like, climbing on his back and he's like, I guess, I don't...
Yeah, there's a point where he's like, I can't concentrate with this bullshit.
Yeah.
There was that scene where they're, like, he's, like, posing with the women who are holding up at his, like, his thighs. And the photographer's like, miss, if you could just lower your head, please lower your head.
Lay closer to the ground. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's just something that and you know, it's like the documentary and Arnold were both just like, they're like, let's get him carrying people. Let's get him, like, let's get shots of him carrying girls and stuff.
You know, he probably had sex with all of those women.
Honestly, probably. Well, and remember, well,
maybe not now, but he's like, I had the train. This is the 100 days.
Maybe, yeah. Remember when he checks into the hotel, like when all the bodybuilders are checking in and like the help is like, hey, this is something we ask everybody. Like, what's your ideal woman? And he's like, oh, it doesn't matter. He's
like, everyone. He's like, big boobs, small boobs, big ass, small ass.
But he wasn't wrong, though. Like, his thing where he was just like,
yes.
As long as, like, at the end of, he's like, as long as the personality is charming.
Right, yes. Yeah. He's like, as long as they have the personality and they're charming, then that does, you know. And that's just fun.
Well, that's like, we were talking about pranks. Like, that's kind of an interesting component of the movie. And we get into get back to Arnold and Lou. There's some interesting stuff that Arnold discusses when he talks about pranks and psyching people out. Like, that's a component of the documentary, is kind of psyching the other people out.
Yeah.
And, like, there's one funny story that Arnold recounts where he's talking to a guy and he's just like, yeah, let me give you some tips. You know, I'm in correspondence with, like, the best people in the world. And, like, so, yeah, I told him, like, yeah, one thing that they're doing over in the United States.
This is just the, like, Dave Impression Hour.
No, what are you talking about? This is a clip from the movie. I just
Man, I didn't notice. It's really good, Dave.
But basically, he says, like, I told this guy to scream a bunch. Scream when you lift. Scream when you lift your arms. Scream when you come out. That is intense. And now, he's laughing. He's just like, now, of course, like, when the guy went out, like, they all thought he was a nut job. But it's like, you gotta, like, okay. And I still don't think he crossed the line here. Because, like, there's a little bit of, like, self-responsibility you gotta take into account. Where it's like, wait a minute, that doesn't make
sense.
You know what I mean?
I've never seen Arnold
maybe
do that.
This is like maybe this is wrong, but I didn't think that was like a real story. I thought he was just like spinning.
Yeah,
the yarn.
I thought so too. I was just like, that seems crazy.
Who in their right mind would do that? Like, he says that the guy got escorted out of the building.
Well, Arnold seems like the guy, you know what, especially in this documentary. Maybe not so much when he's older, but definitely 28-year-old Arnold. He seems like a guy who's like spinning a tall tale or spinning a yarn.
100%. 100%. Yes. Do you think, and this kind of speaks to the idea that you're like, I don't know if this is true or not, that story is told and it's from the same footage as the story about his dad's funeral. Like, all the interviews with him in that kind of clothing in that room.
Oh, well, no, he's telling it that, like, some other guy.
Yeah, that was like an interview that he was giving.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right.
It's not bullshit.
Right. But. You're right. Well, I was just going to say, if everything from that chunk was like, hey, we need to have some sort of arc or angle here, you know, let's just do all these lines in this interview and we'll put them
you're talking about the, like, when he's just looking the most fuckboy, is it the scenes where he's like sitting with, like,
sitting
his,
on a couch,
yeah, laying on the, like, all spread out, just,
I don't think you, like, can ever use the phrase fuckboy about Arnold Schwarzenegger. he's a fuck man. Even
fuck
when
man.
He was 28,
sure.
He's fucking toe to tip. That's a man.
You know, to touch on that for a second, I feel like we gotta, like, obviously out of all the people, like, I feel like they're like taking into account the things that they look at in bodybuilding contests, primarily symmetry, like, symmetrically, his body probably was like the best out of all those guys.
I think this is, I mean, maybe I'm,
like,
speaking out of turn,
like,
here, because I really,
like, cause, like, oh, I'm sorry. Go
oh
ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, I'm definitely speaking about something that I have very limited knowledge of. So, yeah. Like, I'm totally willing to be proved wrong here. But just from what I've seen of this, I feel like there's a lot more subjective judging than objective judging than they may want to admit that's going on. And I just think at the end of the day, like, this is – it's a glorified – and there's nothing wrong with it. But it's a beauty pageant, and I think Arnold is the most beautiful. And I think that's it.
I think that's true. It's also – there's – in bodybuilding, there are, like, kind of like schools of thought, or what's in favor and what's out of favor. And Arnold's body, especially in these ones, looks more like the early 50s, 60s bodybuilding. Like, you can tell it in his chest, or in his abs specifically. Like, in his abs, you can only usually see, like, the top two abs, and then his stomach is usually really hollow. Like, he hollows it out. Whereas the other dudes, like, flex real hard, and you see they have, like, nine packs.
Yeah.
And that's what bodybuilding becomes, is, like, how dehydrated can you get? How much striations can you show in your muscles? Which is still a thing you could do in the Olympia of 1975. Like, you still see that when they do the front flex that looks like they're hugging. That's just showing, like, all the muscle. But I think that is kind of a part of it, is like the some of the guys he was going against, they have the bodies that I think 80s and 90s bodybuilding will aspire to be.
And those judges who were probably older and came up in like the 50s and 60s.
Right. Yes. And so the taste is different. So Arnold still has that going for him, whereas the other guys are like, no, this is where we're going. We're going to pack on every pound of muscle you can get. Every muscle is going to be showable and stuff like that. But you could tell, like, Arnold's wasn't, right? I mean,
especially like, this is 1975 South Africa, and like, Arnold looks like a racist, like, white, like, Aryan.
Yeah.
Propaganda.
I don't think the judges were just South African judges. It was the IFBB, so I assume that it was just hosted there.
Okay. Yeah, that was like that was a weird thing about this whole documentary, is like, cuz it was so much of it is like apartheid South Africa, and there's like that dinner scene we were talking about. You see in the background, there's just like an array of black, like, servants just like standing there. It's kind of weird.
Apparently the production was delayed a little bit, not production, but the putting on of the actual Mr. Olympia, because they had to find a place in South Africa that wasn't a venue that wasn't in apartheid Africa, because they're like, no, we're going to have
Mr. France, the number two.
Exactly. We're going to have black people competing, so you can't, like, we can't host this somewhere where they can't compete or they can't be let in the building. So I don't know about the hotels necessarily, but, like, that was a big part of it, was they're like, no, we got to find somewhere that doesn't have that bullshit going on.
That Serge guy wins second place.
Yeah, Mr. France.
Mr. France, who apparently, which is interesting to think about, like, the arcs of the top three competitors, right? Of the above 200 weight class, because the top two is actually Arnold and Franco. But the above 200 weight class, Arnold, not yet a star, has been in a movie.
Well, what did he been in this time?
So, honestly, at the point that this movie comes out, he had been in Hercules in New York, and I think that's it. He might have been in a TV show. But when this was shot in 1975, he wasn't in anything. He was not an actor. Mr. France, Serge, they say was famous in France. He was a TV actor in France. And then Lou Ferrigno obviously was going to become the Hulk in like 10 years.
Actually, no, I think it was like a couple years after this. It was late 70s.
Was the Hulk late 70s?
Yeah.
Well, good for him.
Well, they probably saw this documentary and was just like, we need that guy. We need that underdog story.
The Hulk.
The Hulk.
Yeah. Oh, he actually... maybe this is just movies, because it looks like film. Let me see TV. He's the Incredible Hulk in the pilot movie in 1977. So
just 2 years later.
Well, the same year that this documentary came out.
Right.
Oh wow. Yeah. Okay. Oh right, because the documentary would have come out like a year or so after the competition.
Well, the documentary wasn't finished. It was so it was shot in 1975, and then a bunch of the bodybuilders had to like raise funds to finish the movie, it didn't come out till 77.
Oh wow,
78. Yeah, all of this, of course, from our handy dandy chat.
And when was Conan, Cody? I assume you have that off the top of your head.
I believe that's 1983.
Okay, and that's 82. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's really when he became movie star, right? Like he wasn't really like a movie star before Conan.
not really. No, I think this kind of got him noticed. I think this got him on the map. Conan definitely put him on the track to international stardom. Then obviously when the Terminator came in '84, that's his career was just superstar.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to kind of get into some of the other components of this movie that I thought were interesting. So we've been talking about Lou Ferrigno, that he's kind of perceived as an underdog in this documentary. Honestly, like watching it now, like I was really struck by his training process. And you mentioned like this kind of comes off as a beauty pageant, Mike. That I really get those vibes with Lou's training and his dad. Just like, come on, man. Like he really has the vibe of one of those beauty pageant moms. Mm-hmm. Like he's putting everything into his son.
There's that scene, the scene when he's like on the stage and it's like cutting to the dad and he's like, he's posing, but I'm there with him. I've been through this routine and I'm getting everything except the applause.
Yeah, and he goes, he's like, but he does say, but Lou deserves it.
He comes off as nice.
I feel you. There's a little.
There's some questionable moments.
All of these people have daddy issues, though. I'm gonna say, like, it's kind of. It is not lost on me that two of our main characters have cops for dads, and have now been driven to this like discipline.
They're very strict.
Yeah.
You just keep after him. Wherever he goes, you pose down with him, right next to him. Let the judges make a comparison. You're 6'5", you're going to be the biggest thing that ever went out on that platform at 275 pounds, Louis. They know that, and he knows it. This is for the big baby, Louis. This is for all the marbles, and we're going to go after it, right? 1 year of training, all wrapped up in one night, Louis. Remember that. When you step out there, boy, remember all those grueling nights and mornings in the gym. And this is it. This is the reward, and we want it. We want it so bad that we could taste it. Remember that when we get out on that stage.
That's right.
We got to get so excited, Louis, that when we get out there, we have only one thought in mind. That's the Olympia. We're going to win.
Like, there was, like, seriously a moment when Lou Ferrigno was in the training room and he's drinking some water. I was half expecting his father to be like, that's enough of that water. You don't deserve water. You do 10 more reps, you can have some water. You know what I mean? Like, that was... Maybe he's just an intense fellow.
I loved it. I love this, like, old, like, 70s... like real Brooklyn family of just like eating in the like shitty kitchen, like they're having like fried chicken and lasagna. And
well, it's just like Arnold's the best, man. Arnold's the best. You got to beat Arnold. You know what I mean? It's just like one of the
Lou's literally like screaming like Arnold. Yes,
the scariest scene in the movie is like Arnold. Like that shit was legitimately scary. Like I want to beat him, Arnold.
It's straight up Vegeta. It's also something like training
because
yelling Goku.
One more, same weight, Hank.
I'm not satisfied. Half more weight.
Let's go.
I want to beat him. I need 10 pounds.
10 pounds on each side.
Yeah.
I'm ready, Hank.
Come on, I want to see 10.
10.
You're gonna do it. Dude. Come on, you're gonna wipe him out.
I'll do it.
Come on,
Luke,
push.
Drive
him out. Sing him out. Come on, halfway.
Come on,
you're gonna do it. Come on.
Arnold.
Yeah. Yes, it's very much that. It's also interesting just because you see this massive body, right? He's the biggest dude. He's 6'5". He's 275 pounds, whereas the rest are like
Lou,
220, 240.
Lou Ferrigno, yeah.
Yeah, Lou Ferrigno is the biggest one. And he also is like the most soft-spoken. And because of like, you know, how he was hard of hearing from a young age and stuff like that. So his voice is really gentle. And so he's screaming Arnold. But and you're just like, this guy, he comes off so shy. He comes off very sweet. Like you seem like he must have been only like, you know, in his early 20s.
He was 24. In
24. There you go. And it's just interesting that, he's 24. And they talked about, oh, Lou, you know, he grew up. He was like, he was skinny. He couldn't put on weight. And then they were like backstage at a show and he saw Arnold and he was like, oh, this is what he's committing his life to for sure now.
Yeah.
He's definitely got a chip on his shoulder. Like, he's definitely the underdog story. And like I do feel bad for Lou when he gets third, you know what I mean? At the end of the movie, I'm like, oh.
Hey, but he was young, you know. He had time, and he got third in Mr. Olympia. It's still pretty.
He
good.
He got third in his first year,
his first try. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like, he did.
Think about Ken Waller walking around in the background,
just filming everything. Can I join too?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's. More of my first viewing, I would have maybe felt bad, but again, now my older, wiser years, like Lou did great. He's fine. He should be proud of himself.
Like he says, more time to train. Like I'll come back better than ever.
Yeah, and he became the Hulk. What other human being has ever played the Hulk? Like that is
like for real.
That is a massive accomplishment. He can take
he
to his grave.
He didn't need no CGI help.
No, that will never happen again.
Guys, I'm going over various resources here from the Chatopedia, and I've just come across the name of a movie that I must leave post haste to go into the waste to find, and that is the third movie that Lou Ferrigno starred in. So after his Pumping Iron debut, he starred as Hercules in Hercules in 1983.
Which I want to see.
But also in 1983, he was in a movie called The Seven Magnificent Gladiators.
Damn, that sounds good.
Yep, The box office success of Conan the Barbarian sparked a mini revival of Peplum films.
What's his character's Peplum name being? In that movie?
Oh, good question. So Peplum is Sword and Sorcery. His character name is... Oh, man. It doesn't say. Why won't it say? How do I find this? You know it's just a Gladiator retelling of Seven Samurai, and I can't wait. I'll try and do some more research when Chad's up and running. But yeah, that I just like you see that title, The Seven Magnificent Gladiators. Oh, okay, great.
So yeah, long story short, Arnold wins. He retires. I think I mentioned this before. Like you really, this was before Arnold was a movie star. Like you get everything you need to know about Arnold in this movie. Like where he developed his face, his charisma, his undeniable charisma. Like when he comes out, like. Maybe they just don't show it, but I feel like with Arnold, they always show him just really playing to the crowd and just smiling, like, I love you. And, like, when he wins, he does this move where, like, he just sort of holds his was that me?
Yeah.
Did I win?
We see Mike Katz do that a little bit. Like, when we first see Mike Katz, he's talking about how, like, my whole thing is I work the crowd up and the crowd loves me.
These are the good guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially, the documentary.
You guys remember how there's the scene where Arnold goes to a...
prison,
a co-ed prison in California.
I have forgotten about that scene. When that scene plays out, this is a what the fuck moment in the movie. Like when that scene plays out, they're outside. So like my first instinct is like, oh, he must just be at like Muscle Beach or something that, whatever. But then like the camera pans a little bit and you see like just what is clearly unmistakably a prison. And then there's this girl there. He's just like, yeah, maybe you know we can get together. Like I'm sure you haven't had any.
It was she took his shirt off for him.
Yes.
And then he kissed her on the cheek. Yes. And everyone cheered. And he's like, what? She probably hasn't had a kiss in a year. You know,
which I didn't understand at first. And then I was like, wait. They're at a prison?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
is
and then there's like the gay panic moment where he's.
I'll kiss you too.
Yeah, a guy asks for him a kiss, and Arnold like looks around, laughs, and he's like, "Come up here and get your kiss."
You know, and for 1975, that actually like did not go as bad as I was like expecting it to.
No.
Well,
I think that he basically says like, "Yeah, I heard about you guys."
He does. Yeah, he does joke about prison gay. Yeah, it's. But, I mean, just the fact that there is a co-ed prison.
That was bizarre.
I was like, is that normal? I don't know.
Well, that was bizarre, but also the fact, like, did the prison organize this? Like, we're going to have a bodybuilder come.
Like demonstration.
Demonstration.
Yeah.
Like, to what end? What?
I was thinking, too, because, like, it was cool that they, like, shot the... interviewed the inmates afterwards and they were like some of them were really into it and I was just thinking like man what a story of like ever tell you the time like you know later you know ever tell you time I was like in jail for we don't have to get into why but you ever you know who I met there was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He said he'd kiss me. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah
it's a weird stretch of that movie.
It's so bizarre, but yeah, I think you bring up like an interesting point, Mike. Like second viewing of this movie, like it's just, I had the same thoughts seeing it the first time, and this time watching it, it's just like yeah, this is just friendly rivalries and competition, and there's nothing too nefarious here. Even with Ken Waller, like even that, it's like
yeah, we're just egging it on.
It's
but
like yeah, he like took a guy's shirt. And
you know what
it,
I think?
Yeah,
I think it might be more than me getting older. I think it might just be, you know, we're living in the wasteland right now, and we've seen, like, what real shitty behavior looks
like. We've seen what people can do to each other.
Yeah, and, like, and by comparison, Arnold being like, I hope he doesn't get too buff, is like... It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is that, I guess it makes sense, right? Because at this point, Arnold wasn't the superstar that he is. But it's interesting that they delve into his background a little bit, but they don't talk about the fact that, like, you know, how he got into bodybuilding was he was in the army and he, like, went AWOL for a weekend to go compete for the first time.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, like, his whole thing was the first competition he ever entered was at a, like, a city nearby, but not where he was stationed. So he got off base and ran from the Austrian army and then, you know, went and won this competition and came back. Excuse me. Came back with his, like, trophies.
There was no war going on, right?
Not at the time.
He was just like in the reserves or whatever.
Yeah. It was just mandatory service or whatever. So he was there because he's Austrian and I don't remember where he was stationed or anything like that. But he was a tank driver or something like that. Like he worked in tanks.
Oh,
that was his job, was working in tanks. And it was a big point that because he was in, like, growing up, you know, he grew up, they didn't have access to food and stuff like that like they did. And then when he got to the army, he could eat more, but he still had to, like, eat like crazy to pack on.
Well, he grew up kind of poor, right?
Right. Well,
he had, like, trouble, like, issues with like food, like eating when he was young? Like he was like that poor?
Well, like it just, the whole area was poor. Like food, like you just didn't have access to bodybuild. You need to eat like, you know, three dozen eggs and drink a gallon of milk. And it's like, no, you just cannot have that. And that's why it's interesting. Like we haven't talked about Franco at all, but when he's back in Sardinia with his family and you're just looking at everyone around him and they're like, oh, these people were born in the 1890s and they're with their, you know, with Franco and they look like skeletons with a little bit of flesh on them. And it's just like, that's a hard life this guy's lived. And he's like, oh yeah, we're eating this like one thing that we have or whatever.
That's why Franco,
and Franco's like, oh, let me deadlift the back of this car real quick.
So you can get out of this parallel.
Yeah, he's like, moving the car to get out of the parallel park spot. Chef's kiss.
That was a nice little moment in like, because there's a handful of different bodybuilders that they follow, or little tiny stories. Like, I really enjoyed the Franco Colombo mini story.
Me too.
Like, growing up in Italy, he's like, he's in the under 200-pound class. And I think it's interesting, they say that he was a featherweight boxer, which in my mind, featherweight is like, maybe it's different in boxing versus
it
MMA. I'm assuming it's featherweight is bigger in boxing.
I couldn't tell you, actually. I know it's different, but boxing has weight classes that are like 7 pounds instead of 10 pounds in MMA.
But it looked like they were going off of height more than anything.
He's a shorter guy too. But yeah, I like Franco's little mini story where you see him in Italy growing up, and just like, yeah, like there's this guy trying to get out of a park. This is like me trying to get out of like a tough parallel parking job. But like, I wish I could have Franco Colombo come lift the back of my car up and I can get out of there. Like, I can't imagine. Like, I remember like visiting friends in Portland like before the bombs fell, and just the parallel parking. I wouldn't be able to survive in old Portland.
Featherweight in boxing is 126 pounds. It's 20 pounds lighter than MMA.
Okay, because like they show old pictures of Franco Colombo, so clearly he was like a smaller guy than he became later in bodybuilding.
And then he's like, just kidding, I'm going to get swole now.
But yeah, he's huge. And like, it's interesting, like, they kind of touch on this in the thing, but like Franco Colombo and Arnold Schwarzenegger later in life were like, well, not later in life, they were like best friends. Yeah. Like, Franco Colombo was his best friend. And it would have been interesting if they kind of delved into that friendship a little more than they do. But just Franco Colombo. Good guy.
Yeah, good guy. Good guy. I like him.
Was he ever in any movies of note?
I want to say that he was.
It's interesting because Colombo was based off of him. No, I'm just kidding.
I want to say, I may be totally wrong here, fact check, but like, I feel like Franco Colombo might have.
He was
a stunt double.
He was in
for Arnold,
Conan,
right?
He was he plays a Pict in Conan the Barbarian.
Ah, okay.
But other than that, I don't know.
But
what
I want to. I'm pretty sure that Franco Colombo like helped Arnold on a lot of movies as like a stunt guy or like a double or something like that. Like they were like besties for a long time.
I don't know how convincing of a double that man would be for Arnold.
Well, like far off shots.
He's definitely in mostly Arnold movies. He's in the 1976 film Stay Hungry as Franco Orsini. He plays the hustler of Muscle Beach as himself. He's in the movie The Comeback as himself. He's in Conan the Barbarian as Pictish Scout. He's in The Terminator as Future Terminator.
That's right. He's the one that storms in like what? Yeah, like his fever dream, and he has like that chain gun laser thing.
There you go. He's in Getting Physical as himself. He's in Don Rickles, Rickles on the Loose as himself. He's in Predator as medic, uncredited. He's in The Running Man as 911 security officer number 2. He's in Last Man Standing as baddie. He's in Big Top Pee Wee as Otto the Strongman. He's in a movie called Perduta as L'Americano. So he's in an Italian movie as the American. he's in Il Ritmo del Silenzio as Nerushigo.
So a lot of smaller stuff.
It kind of disappears. Then he's in.
So it kind of sounds like Arnold's just like, hey, Franco, like you in the country? Like, you want to come help me on a movie or something?
Yeah.
Like, it seems very much just like, hey, do you got a weekend free? Why don't you come over to the movie I'm shooting? We can get you a little part as a Pict or something.
Yeah. It looks like he did win the 1976 Mr. Olympia lightweight and overall. Once Arnold was out of there,
year.
He crushed, man.
Nice.
Good for him. His powerlifting records, guys, this is what I was curious about. Bench press, 525 pounds. He could squat 655 pounds. His deadlift was 750 pounds.
Jesus.
God bless him. Just imagine how much they had to eat all
the
time.
There is one point where they say, like, he's like the strongest man or something like that. Someone says that of Franco Colombo in the movie.
Probably. I don't know.
But anyway, I was wondering if, give Franco a shout out. He seemed like a cool dude. But anyway. But that's a kind of, oh well, we gotta address like the main thing that everyone remembers from this movie, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I think there's a couple things left, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, the first thing I was thinking of, and it kind of blends together, but there's two scenes. The first thing I was thinking of was the post win doobie.
Yeah,
that Arnold smokes,
and his shirt says Arnold is numero uno. Yeah, it's the fucking best.
And it kind of gets into what we were saying before. Like, there's not, like, at the end of the day, they're all just kind of, like, buds and like, friends in this competition. They're all, like, in the same room, and Arnold's got his doobie, and he's just like, hey, guys, it's Lou's birthday. And they bring him a cake, and the speech, and he's just like, I just want to eat my cake.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's a nice little scene.
That was, like, sealed the wax seal on This Is All in Good Fun, is when Arnold is like, speech, and Lou is like, oh, I just want to eat cake. And Arnold's like, all right.
Yeah. And we almost get like, I was thinking of like The Graduate at the end of the movie when Lou and his parents and Arnold are in the back of the bus and they're going to the airport.
You should put,
going it, to the airport.
Put a cut of that with the sound of silence. Like.
But it's just like a fun moment where they're in the back, or like Lou takes his shirt off and like Arnold sort of like, makes fun of him, but just sort of like, I got to get out of the way. His muscles are so big, and then he kind of mocks him, does his thing, and then it freeze frames. We get a freeze frame, and it's just them smiling. It's just like, and all in good competition, all in good fun type thing. And like, weirdly though, it did remind me of The Graduate, which is Lewis thinking like, I'm thinking of his inner monologue, like, oh man, now that Arnold's gone, like, can I ever live up to him? Like, he went out on top. Like,
meanwhile, Arnold's just now talking to him about how his mom's gonna set him up with his sister.
Yeah, he's like, after this, I can come over to your house, eat some lasagna, maybe set up with your sister. And Lou is like, oh, you're gonna have to talk to my dad about that. Like, oh, maybe I will.
So there's one other scene that we haven't talked about, and I thought
it
was the one.
The other
infamous scene, which is the one I thought you were going to bring up, is when Arnold, 28-year-old Arnold Schwarzenegger, talks to us about the pump.
Yes.
It's when your muscles fill with blood after a great workout, and you just feel like your
skin is
going
to explode any minute. You know, it's really tight. It's like somebody blowing air into your muscle. It just blows up, and it feels different. It feels fantastic. It's as satisfying to me as coming is, you know, as having sex with a woman and coming. So can you believe how much I am in heaven? I'm like getting the feeling of coming in the gym. I'm getting the feeling of coming at home. I'm getting the feeling of coming backstage when I pump up, when I pose out in front of 5,000 people. I get the same feeling. So I'm coming day and night. I mean, it's terrific, right? So, you know, I'm in heaven.
Oh, I just love getting... Like,
I'm coming.
I imagine him waking up in the middle of the night at midnight. Like, most people go to get, like, a glass of milk or a glass of water. He's like, you know what? I think I'm going to get the nice little pump.
That's how you become fucking Mr. Olympia,
yes.
Dude.
Yeah.
That's why he's not most people.
Oh, God. He is definitely, like, he mentions in the movie, like, he talks about kind of, like, legacy. And he's just, like, he talks about, like, all these people, like... At one point, he's just like, oh, these dictators.
Yeah.
I'm just like, Arnold.
Yeah, he was like, as a kid, I looked up to strong people like dictators.
Yeah, that was gnarly. But I also then thought, I was like, you know what? He grew up in, you know, 1950s, like Central Europe. Maybe dictators is what they were thinking about.
That was a little... But then he also says, you know, but like Jesus, you know? It's almost
Jesus,
like he self-corrects.
Remember for 2000
years. It's like he self-corrects, like dictators. I mean... Jesus.
100%. You're totally right. Yeah. That's what that moment is himself correcting.
I mean. Yeah, he's like, wait a minute. Save yourself, Arnold. Like, Jesus Christ.
Like the other famous man, Jesus Christ.
Oh, man. Ooh, good thing I save myself. Good thing there's
ooh,
not, like,
close
a video
one,
service
Arnold.
On some sort of, like, network internet thing where people can look at this years later. who cares? It's not like I'm going to run for public office.
Yeah, it's great.
God. Is he smoking when he's talking about coming too?
No, but he looks like he looks like he's high.
It looks like he's high.
He probably was smoking before that.
Yeah, there's a couple scenes where you can see his eyes are like glazed, and you're just like, oh, he's
like,
high.
If the camera had zoomed out a bit, you probably would have seen like a little cloud of smoke.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, it's 1975 in Venice, California. Like, it's a given
for sure.
It's probably, although in fairness or whatever, the weed is probably like very, very weak. Like, he's probably like smoking an entire joint is equivalent to like one puff of like, you know,
the current radioactive weed.
Right, current radio weed.
But that's kind of, I think that's kind of all I had. Do you guys have any other points you wanted to discuss?
Let me see.
It's a good documentary. Like it's breezy. It's quick. There isn't a lot of fat, and I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I guess I just feel like it's modern in the way that like it feels snappy and like there's like a really distinct arc to it. Like, yeah, I mean, it's a great documentary.
It's disappointing that you said they manufactured some storylines.
Yeah.
But, other than that, it's a really entertaining watch.
And that's so. I guess here's my thing is like maybe I have a incorrect view of what most documentaries are that are good. In that way, I feel like Pumping Iron, and this might also be different from like my experience because maybe I've just done a lot of research into similar things. I guess because it doesn't feel like documentaries like should inform about a subject, right? Yeah. And you talked about it being like, oh, it's kind of like bodybuilding 101, and it's like, yeah, there's a couple moments where they do that, but that's mostly Arnold explaining like, no, you want to be symmetrical, you want to do this, you want, you know. But otherwise, that doesn't happen often. So it feels weird because it doesn't feel like it's necessarily a good documentary, but it feels like a fun time. I enjoy watching it, and I enjoy the characters of these people kind of like being goofs and then flexing like monsters, which is great. And I guess, you know, maybe it is a good documentary because it does accurately follow their like very small rivalry. You know what I mean? Like a gentle rivalry between these men. But it just doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like I learned too much about the subject, like the history, the roots. And it almost feels like they think about it because the opening credits shows old black and white footage of like Eugene Sandow and stuff like that. These bodybuilders, these strongmen from the 1910s and 20s. And so it's like they know there's this you know, this historical origin, and then it kind of grew from there. But they don't talk about that in middle chunk at all.
I think bodybuilding is more, they're more a jumping off point to get into the story of these characters more than like the sport itself.
Yeah, and I totally feel that. I feel that. I suppose it's just like I said, I would hesitate to say this is a great documentary. But it's a good hour and 20 minutes. Like I enjoyed it completely. But yeah, that's my thing. And like I said, it might just be based off of a misunderstanding of what
I think it's good documentary. I'm gonna say
I'd say that's why it's breezy, but that it doesn't get into the more details of the bodybuilding sport itself. Like there was one interesting takeaway I had as far as that goes. I think it was interesting that at the Olympia thing they had like a pre-audience judging time.
Yeah.
Like they're like no distractions.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean, we're just no one in the audience, it's just the judges, the bodybuilders and the
do your six the poses and then freestyle whatever you want.
I thought that was interesting. Like they don't have the bias, like the audience bias of like, you know, I thought that was kind of an interesting little bit. But yeah, that's a good point. They don't really get into the specific details of the sport itself and the ins and outs, like bodybuilding began in the
90s. Yeah, you know. And it doesn't need to, I guess.
No, but that would make it non-breezy, I
think. Right, 100%. So that's just a thought. Real quick, let me just hit on some other key points of trivia here, right? So Arnold Schwarzenegger admitted that he had made up several stories in the movie for attention because the producers told him that without drama, it would be boring.
Arnold, will you say that you killed your father?
One of the stories made up was the fact that he did not attend his father's funeral because of a bodybuilding competition that was going to happen in a couple of months. Arnold did actually attend his father's funeral and spoke to him shortly before he passed. More than 100 hours of footage was filmed. It eventually had to be edited down to 85 minutes, however. On the 25th anniversary DVD, more footage was shown. Let's see here. To give the film a narrative arc and thus mainstream appeal, the film was originally meant to follow actor Bud Cort being trained by Arnold Schwarzenegger over a year, using his physical development to explore the principles and world of bodybuilding. Cort and Schwarzenegger recorded several hours of footage, but ultimately felt he was wrong for the project and amicably parted ways with the production. He forfeited his salary, asking that it go towards the budget of the film.
Oh, shit.
Some of this footage eventually made it in Raw Iron, the making of Pumping Iron.
There's a making of a documentary. Wow.
Raw Iron.
Raw Iron, based off my other research, Raw Iron is more of a, it's like extra scenes and some other stuff, and then it kind of like also serves as a making of.
Doesn't it also like show them like today or not today?
Yes,
but like
yes. The whole point of it was to follow up with the people now. Well, not now, before then, the dark times.
Yeah.
So this was like in the 2000s or something, to follow up with them and see where they were and like what had happened, and then but they also included all that extra footage, so it kind of became a making of retrospective on that. So, you know, that's cool.
Yeah. It's a good name.
Raw Iron.
That is an action movie title if I ever heard one. So, yeah, definitely a recommend for me for Pumping Iron. It's super breezy. I'm not sure exactly how informative it is on bodybuilding. There's a couple of points you get here and there, but all in all, a very entertaining watch just to see the little dynamic between these bodybuilders in the 70s. I enjoyed it.
Strong recommendation from me, and I think maybe one thing we didn't talk about is it's like almost dips into like motivational territory, which is nice, and we could all use that in the wasteland,
but not like to a sappy like no. In your face degree.
No, you know?
Do I recommend it?
Yeah.
All right, three recommends. Like, I gotta imagine if Ryan were here, he would recommend it as well.
Yeah, it's a given.
I think it's fair to say Ryan is like the Franco Colombo of our podcast. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, all right. That's an interesting angle. Let's match up who everybody is. I'm Mike. Mike said he's Mike Katz. Ryan's Franco Colombo. I guess you're Arnold Schwarzenegger. You're the lead on this one. Well, I'm Waller. I pop in randomly in the background,
filming stuff,
looking like a creep and a mean guy.
Oh man!
I'd see Dave more as Lou's dad.
Yeah,
I don't want to be Lou's dad.
Dave's definitely Lou's dad.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, you're probably right. Like authoritarian figure.
Yeah,
like, trying to like. Yeah. Okay. Oh man. That's a depressing revelation.
Well, then I like Lou's dad. That shifts Mike to be Lou. I'll be Mike Katz.
Well, yeah, Lou. Like Mike is Lou. He replaced you after you left. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wonderful stuff. Good job, everyone. Another great episode. Another hit. Well, exactly. I think it's time we go out and we get our pump on. I got some rocks outside that we can move around, and you know, maybe Ryan can mix us up some weird Mountain Dew juice, and we can just start shooting each other with it. And,
maybe we can lift Ryan.
Oh, all right. His head is so big. It would be equivalent to lifting quite a boulder. So yeah, that you're good call on that one, Michael. You know what? You're a positive influence around this business. I'm glad to have you here.
Thanks, Cody.
You're welcome. I got
glad someone thinks so.
Cody, you essentially retired your role of Mr. Olympia of the video store. Now Mike is essentially the Lou Ferrigno, your replacement.
Oh, sure. Definitely, yeah.
That's a dynamic.
And here. And you can tell because, I mean, listeners in the wasteland, you can't tell this, but Mike and I are very shredded. I mean, we are just absolutely monstrous men.
I mean, I'm probably a little bigger than Lou was in the documentary, but...
Right, yeah. And I'm unfortunately, due to radiation, like several times the size of Lou Ferrigno. I'm about 12 feet tall and 1,000 pounds of pure muscle. It's tough being this big.
Yeah, we're actually...
But I can't help it!
Cody's actually recording this outside of the store. He can't fit in through the door anymore.
They gotta give me a little microphone through a window! I'm so big!
Come on, what's 10 good reps, man?
You have to do everything possible to win, you know, no matter what. I spent with him one night. I go downstairs and put us together in a room, you know, to help him for tomorrow's contest. And that night, he will never forget. I will mix him up. He will come so ready to South Africa, so strong. But by the time the night is over, the next morning, he will be ready to lose. I mean, I will just talk him into that. It's no problem to do it now. When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advice. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advice.
Oh, I beat him! Silence.
In restless dreams I walked alone. Narrow streets of cobblestone.